In today's episode, we'll explore how building a successful brewery is a step-by-step journey, starting with the skills and experience you already have. You'll hear from the Tempe Businesswoman of the Year about what you absolutely need to start a business, how hiring for the right culture shapes your team's success, and the real difference between micromanaging and delegating. Finally, we'll uncover the core of what makes a lasting impact in your brewery. Let's get started. Welcome to Business Isn't Hard. Today, I'm joined by someone who blends science, entrepreneurship, and community. Sue Rigler is the founder and CEO of 100 Mile Brewing Company, a craft brewery located just steps from Tempe Town Lake. With a degree in microbiology from ASU and over 20 years in sales and marketing, Sue went back to school in her 50s to pursue brewing professionally. In 2022, she opened 100 Mile Brewing, a vibrant space that's become a community hub for beer lovers, runners, families, and even dogs. Under her leadership, 100 Mile Brewing Co. was recently named Small Business of the Year by the Tempe Chamber of Commerce. She's one of only 2% of brewery owners in the U.S. who are women, and she's built more than just a business. She's built a movement rooted in passion, perseverance, and purpose. Sue, welcome to the show. How are you?
Well, thank you, Oliver. That was quite an introduction. You've done your research, haven't you?
A little bit. Yeah, no, I'm super excited for this. Can you tell me a little bit how you started 100 Mile Brewing Co.?
Sure. I have always had, I say this lightly, but an affinity for beer. Even when I was young, even before I could drink beer, at the age of 10, I collected beer cans and there's a picture of me when I was 10 in a Budweiser t-shirt. So it just seems like, and I'm from Iowa, and my parents had picnics and block parties and pig roasts and whatnot. So it was around beer, and everybody was always happy at these events. The kids were playing, the adults were laughing, there were pool parties. So then as I grew up, I just realized and became of drinking age that beer really does bring people together, and it's a community. There's laughter, there's stories sharing. So, and I, as you said, I have a background in microbiology. So when I saw a microscope in a craft brewery, in 2014, that kind of my two worlds collided right then.
Yeah, it's probably not something you expect to see right immediately.
No, I didn't at all. And I actually was coming out of the restroom and the laboratory was across the hall and the door was open and I saw this lab. And being a science geek, you know, I was looking at the test tubes and centrifuges and the microscope. So this light bulb went on and I went and had a great conversation with the brewer who told me that brewing is a lot of science and obviously the conversion of yeast into alcohol. It grabbed me right then, and that's when I enrolled. I went back to UC San Diego into their brewing program.
Mm-hmm. So you spent kind of a bit of time in the corporate world before you went into brewing, correct?
Yes.
Okay. What was that? Did that set up like a really big foundation for you? Like how much of those skills did you take into starting your own brewery?
I think, everything builds, you know, and I have four kids and I always tell my kids that, you know, it's your permanent record and what you do back in your 20s is going to affect your 30s and 40s and 50s and all builds. So yes, I was in, I worked in a cancer research lab, out of college. And then I got into sales. So I got into medical sales. So my, background, then you kind of learn to communicate and
I'm sure you learn a lot of soft skills that way.
Huh? A lot of soft skills. Yes. And I have a lot of great mentors from that time in my life. And then I had my kids and I stayed home and I started my own marketing company where I doing graphic design. So I took some classes at UCLA in Adobe.
Oh, there you go.
I was on Adobe Photoshop when it was 4.5
or 5. Gosh.
Yeah. So
a little bit
I'm aging myself. Yeah. So I took classes in Illustrator and Photoshop and I had a graphic company and then I evolved that and then I did branded merchandise. So t-shirts and caps and bags for corporate America, which is what a lot of logos. Mm-hmm. So I learned branding from that.
Okay.
I had Clinique and BMW and some major brands and Toyota.
That's impressive, yeah.
So I learned from them that, you know, your colors are your colors, your font is your font. So branding is very important. It's your one voice and there's a personality in a brand. So I took a lot from that as well, from the branding aspect and then the selling aspect. And they all kind of, again, they you know, when I was creating 100 Mile, I took a lot of effort to create my logo
really
because of that. in a lot of other breweries, and not knocking any other breweries, but they'll have a hop cone or, you know, a stem of wheat.
Yeah.
It's not, it doesn't really differentiate them, but we have the Roadrunner. Our Roadrunner is super very, cool. Yeah. It represents the Southwest mm-hmm. motion, innovation, friendliness. So there was a lot that went into the logo.
Yeah, no, and I'm sure there's a lot that went into the company as a whole. I'm sure that was a huge step for you, like as a career, just for your family in general in your life, to just go off and start your own brewing company, especially considering all of the equipment and everything that you have to invest in. What was that like? Was that a huge, scary jump for you, or is it something you kind of really felt confident in?
Well, when I had that aha moment in 2014, literally, I never looked back.
Really?
I was okay. So passionate. I'm going to open a brewery.
That's awesome.
And I lived in California at the time. I said, when my youngest, Lucy, graduates from high school, and she graduated in 2019, this was in 2014, when she graduates from high school, I'm going to move back to Arizona and open a brewery.
Oh, okay.
When my youngest graduates from high school, I'm going to move back to Arizona and open a brewery. And I never, ever, ever looked back. I was so passionate about it that I was going to do it. Come hell or high water, I was going back to Arizona and open a brewery. So with that in mind, and that's when they say, you know, passion drives your decisions. It was like, I wanted to open a brewery and I was going to do it. And here we are in 2022. It took me from 2014 going to school. And, but it, again, it was my passion that drove me. And then I found the building, which mm-hmm. was a fluke. I can share that story.
Yeah,
and then I got my funding. So everything kind of just fell into place as it should.
Oh, that's super cool. Yeah. And I have to ask before we, because I want to get into more of how you started it. But for those of, you know, those people in college, people who recently graduated who are maybe struggling to find what they really enjoy, obviously it's kind of more of an aha moment for you, but I'm sure there is a long journey and process for you in really understanding what you enjoy and what your passion is. Do you have any tips, tricks, any pieces of advice for those who are really trying to figure that out?
Well, you know, having four kids.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of my oldest is a doctor. So he was always driven in that path. He was going to go to school, medical school. And then mm-hmm. the other three aren't, yeah, I mean, they're not either a doctor or a lawyer, but they have their paths have intertwined and up and down because they didn't know what they didn't have that straight path to being a doctor. So I just always, I tried to tell them, or, you know, as much as they listen to moms, you know, is weed out what you don't want to do. Mm-hmm. You know, my youngest daughter, she wanted to go into real estate, and, you know, she doesn't want to do anything medical. She doesn't want to do anything with law. So that's what I say is try to weed out things that you don't want to do, first of all. And that helps a lot. And then you are never, unless you're going to be a doctor or mm-hmm. a lawyer, but chances are you're just not going to, when you graduate, you don't have to figure it out right then. Because I worked in a cancer research lab. And now I own a brewery. I sold stuff. Yeah. So mm-hmm. it's just learn. And again, it all builds on it. Every experience builds on it. And if not that you fail, you can't fail, because it just builds on that. You don't want to do that or stay away from that.
Yeah.
Or you learn a lot from what isn't right. Or I don't want to use the word fail, but. Sometimes we fail.
Yeah, no, it's okay to admit it, right?
Right?
But you treat it as a learning experience, I think.
Right.
Yeah, and everybody's going to make mistakes. But again, it really builds on itself. And I think that's, you know, kind of the point. It's a process.
And it's like nowadays, there's so much pressure. And I tell my own kids, I mean, this is real life stuff. Is like, you don't have to figure it out. This is not a forever. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, go and enjoy and learn and then... I mean, the old days back, you know, my dad had one job his whole entire life, and he couldn't figure out why we switched jobs so often. Yeah. But it's different, right? It's different right now. So mm-hmm. you take from one and you build it, and then you move on and learn from it.
It is, and it's great advice. And it's tough to hear, right? Because especially as a college student, you want to be able to enjoy what you're doing right out of college. But I think at the end of the day, unless you have that really direct path, it just is, you know, unrealistic. But if you embrace it, I think that's important.
I think embrace it. And then what you said is, you know, enjoy what you're doing mm-hmm. right out of college. But if you hate it, if you really despise what you're doing, change.
Yeah.
You're too young at this point. Even me at my age, I mean, anybody shouldn't be stuck in something that they don't like to do.
No.
You know?
Yeah.
And look at me at 50. I totally changed. So you can, it's never too late.
No. Yeah. I love that. It's you're never in a dead end.
No.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Now, going into you starting the brewery. I'd love to hear a little bit more of how you found the building, because you said it was a fluke.
It was. I sold brewing equipment for a company called, it was a German company, Krones, okay, and a U.S. manufacturer, Sprinkman. So I went around to, I was a craft beer analyst and sold brewing equipment.
Oh, that's really cool, actually.
Right before COVID, correct. And I mean, I literally got paid to do research, and air quotes, research, okay, because I went to over 500 breweries on the West Coast. So I got to see the good, the bad, the smelly breweries, the aromatic ones, the mm-hmm. light, the dark, the clean, the dirty. I saw it all from a branding standpoint too. Marketing,
a lot of exposure.
So much exposure. I was so blessed to have that mm-hmm. opportunity. And then COVID hit and all the breweries shut down. So I was, they didn't furlough anybody and I was stuck at a desk then. So I shifted into this project that had to do with economic development and site selections, because they're a mm-hmm. billion-dollar company. So they have big companies and they wanted me to kind of pry and to figure out how companies pick certain cities or regions or land or whatnot. So I was doing some research again for this, and I found out that Cushman Wakefield had a food and beverage advisory group. So
oh, wow. Okay.
For site selection. Well, I'm just a party of one and I don't have billions of dollars, but for shits and giggles, I'm going to call Cushman Wakefield and see if they have anything. Okay. And that's how I found this building.
Oh, that's super cool. And I can't believe, so you saw so many breweries before you came into it. Were there anything that like really stuck out? I mean, obviously you see there's different smells, there are different feels, there's different branding. As far as like which breweries were like successful or more successful in your eyes, what really stood out to you?
You know what? Without naming any specific breweries, what always stuck out was, and maybe it's because I have a branding or a marketing mm-hmm. brain
yeah.
as well as, I mean, the beer better be good.
Yeah, you know? That's a first.
Right? It's kind yeah. of a given that it should be, but good beer doesn't mean that you're going to be successful as a brewery. Mm-hmm. It is, and we have discussions here that it's 100 Mile Brewing. So we are a brewery and we are almost like a marketing firm as well.
Yeah.
So okay. I tended to look more on the marketing, the colors, the feel, the intangibles, mm-hmm. I call it really is the intangibles, because yeah. mm-hmm. the food, the beer, those are tangibles. You can yeah. rate those and eat them and drink them and whatnot, but you can't, the intangibles is how does your tap room feel when people, what is the energy? What is the vibe when people mm-hmm. come in? Are they comfortable? Are they angry? Is it dark? Is your music too loud? So that's what I focused on a lot. And I learned a lot just from that.
So, yeah. So I'm assuming when you went into it and you started 100 Mile as yourself, after seeing all that, was there a very specific vibe feeling? Did you have kind of everything, like a vision laid out in your head for how you wanted it to look?
Absolutely not.
Okay, really?
No.
How did that process go? Yeah.
I knew that I wanted it to be comfortable and a vibe. I wanted it to be, but I'm not a designer. Mm-hmm. And had I left it up to my own efforts, we would have had picnic tables probably on card chairs, folding chairs in there. But I like Postino's, which is a local restaurant here. Mm-hmm. It's a good feel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Good service. The colors are right, the comfortable, it's soft, and it's a wine bar. Yeah. They have beer, but it's a wine bar. So I went and looked at how they did it, and I found their designer.
Oh, wow. And oh, there you go.
Her name is Melissa Friday from Zan Creative out of Denver, Colorado. Mm-hmm. And I pretty much stalked her until I got a hold of her.
Oh, that's really funny, actually.
And she designed our tap room.
Oh, that's super cool. That's a really interesting approach, I guess. I would mm-hmm. never would have thought about it, but I mean, obviously there's people out there who have designed things that you like in the past, so just taking literally inspiration from that.
That was like, I mean, in Melissa's Zan, XAN Creative, if you go on her website, she only does hospitality, so it's just mm-hmm. restaurants, so it's either wine bars, ice cream, breakfast, breweries, and she sits down with her clients and listens to what is important to them.
Interesting.
And she creates that. And it's amazing how cool. It just, her renderings look exactly like our tap room. It's wow. crazy. And I mean, she's super, super talented.
Yeah. I'm assuming that, obviously her services and everything else, costs a little bit. You said you were able to get funding for that. Was that a big process or how did you go about that?
Yeah, in general? That's a great question, because I was fortunate enough to get, when I was selling brewing equipment and back to the building and the lease, I'm leasing this building, is when I was selling brewing equipment, nobody ever got their first lease. Because you couldn't buy your equipment until you knew what building for the ceiling height and the space that your tanks were going to be in.
Okay.
So I actually lost some orders because their leases fell through. They were going to get the equipment. So I got my first, it was one and done. I had the lease signed. I kept thinking you know, something's going to drop here. But so I got the building, and then the funding was the next one. And then I was funded by an SBA loan, Small Business Association loan. And I just methodically just kept filling out the paperwork. It's a lot of paperwork. Kept filling it out. And I was approved for my loan for the whole entire thing. And that's why I am 100%. This brewery, 100 Mile Brewing, is 100% solely women owned.
That's really cool.
I have a team, obviously, but it's because I'm on paper. I have the funding. I don't have any investors or any other members on the board. So I was funded by a 100% SBA loan. And I certainly wish that the interest rates would come down, because
interest
rates shot up, and that's
you got
not
it right
fun.
As they shot up, huh? Yeah,
right.
I know, that's funny.
Yeah.
And so you got all that. What happened next? I'm assuming you needed team members. Obviously you have the building of your equipment, but where do you go from there?
Where do you go? That's a great question. So here, you know, I have the building. It's doesn't have sewer, doesn't have, a great, so where do you go from there? I need a team.
Yeah.
And team is very important. I need a brewer. I need a general manager. I need, support. So I just you can't hire anybody because you're not open. You have to go through the construction. So co-founder Todd Kessel, and he's also my partner, is a general contractor.
Okay.
So he was instrumental in getting this thing built. I mean, I don't know how to build a brewery, and his sister and I went to college together way, way, way back when. And she goes, when you move to Arizona to build your brewery, she goes, you have to meet my brother. He builds breweries in Arizona.
That's perfect.
So Lori introduced me to Todd, and we've been together ever since, and he built my dream. So,
that's awesome.
But you just kind of, again, with everything, is you just methodically, you just have to start like doing things step by step. So found your building, get your funding, put together a budget.
Yeah.
Which I had to do the SBA, you require a budget. So, and then it was finding the designer, and she picked out the furnishings, and then I started the talent acquisition to find a general manager, and it was, you just kind of step by step.
Yeah, just knocked it out. Was that, how important was it? Obviously it was important, but for those who are like maybe thinking starting a business, to have that co-founder, right? Somebody who's like in it with them through it for most of the way, you know what I mean?
Right. And I mean, there's no way I would have been able to, I don't know how to build a brewery. So Todd was very instrumental in getting it, all the permits. I mean, and just talk the talk with the contractors and the subcontractors and the, so absolutely I couldn't have done it without him. But you need, and what they say is with any business owner, it's your team.
Yeah.
You have to have a good team. And man, I've been up and down and all around with my team in the 2.5 years. We're building a real cohesive team right now, after 2.5 years, and it's a weight lifted when you have the right people in the right positions.
I'm sure. Yeah. Is there any major lessons learned from really building that team? I'm sure you've probably learned a lot, and there's been a lot of, highs and lows throughout the first few years.
Right. And I want to back up that I always said I wanted to open a brewery, but I always said I'm not going to ever brew with Chinese equipment, because I sold German brewing equipment and US made, and I'm not doing food. If we walk next door into the brewery, it's all China based. And you can walk into my huge, large kitchen. So never say never on that. So I said I wanted to open a brewery, but now I'm a restaurateur. So I have this massive, we really have three companies under one roof. It's all 100 Mile, but we have an event space. Mm-hmm. We have a production facility, which is a brewery and a restaurant. And I've never done any of these before.
Yeah.
So now I have three companies here.
Yeah, now I have three.
So about the team and about this year, first year, it was like I was free falling from an airplane, water from a fire hose, or it was worse than that.
Okay.
So I literally just stayed alive every day and was breathing, because everything is going so fast and all these decisions that I'd never. So you really, really have to lean on some good people.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And then the second year, I could breathe a little bit more, but not. I mean, the second year in business is the first year is really in for all entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. It's not new. It's just you don't get much sleep. You don't get paid very much, if anything at all. Mm-hmm. I didn't take a paycheck for like two years. Oh, so gosh, you have to right. So and you work your ass off, but it's all passion driven, and you just you can't stop. Mm-hmm. You know. So the team, what I've learned now in the third year, we're going into our third year, 2.5 years, mm-hmm. is you must have systems set up.
Interesting. Okay.
Absolutely. SOPs, checklists, systems, accountability.
Uh-huh.
There can be no gray areas. And then we say now it's called don't know, don't care. So don't know is a training, and that's on me as an owner. If mm-hmm. my employees, I cannot hold them accountable to something they don't know. If I haven't trained them properly, if I haven't given them the SOP, if I haven't given them the checklist, if I haven't articulated what I want them to do, mm-hmm. I cannot write them up. I can't be angry at them. I can't be upset. Mm-hmm. That's a don't know, and that's on me. So mm-hmm. people learn in different ways. So don't know, you train them, you might have to train them a little bit more and a little bit more, but then at some point you cross over to that don't care. Like, hey, I've trained you, you know this, here's the policies, here's a checklist, you know what to do, why aren't you doing it? You know, so that's when you have to start, unfortunately, writing people up, and then they turn, then they go into don't care. So I just learned that, and that's what we're really working on right now is the vaccine is you just really do have to have procedures in place.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Has it been tough to build like a company culture or like a, you know, like a defining element and cohesiveness with everybody as a whole?
You are so good, Oliver, because that was going to be my next thing. Along with policies and procedures, mm-hmm. another very, very important component is company culture.
Yeah.
And that will have your garden grow like fertilizer and water, or it will kill it. Kill a business if your company doesn't know your company culture. And I literally made the mistake. Well, the first year I couldn't breathe. Second year I was like starting to breathe. But then now all of a sudden it's like this, again, it's an aha moment that maybe my company doesn't know my company culture. You know, you got to articulate, you have to write it down, you have to put it. So that's also the second component that we're taking to the system is also people have to know my company culture and the company, the voice of the business. And then so the guest experience will be consistent and as pleasant and positive as possible.
Exactly. Is there any, how do you even start to communicate that? I mean, with these people, like obviously your checklist, you know, do this, do this, do this. And that is like tangibly makes a lot of sense. They have to do this, but to really motivate them or, you know, get them on like, on board with your ideas. Do you have any, how did you learn to do it?
Well, I always joke because it's like, you know, one of my, being from Iowa, it's hospitality and greeting people, mm-hmm. whether that when they come in the door or they leave the door, you know, so I say, you know, smile, but I'm like, smile, I'm like yelling at them, like smile. So it's just literally finding the right managers and team. Mm-hmm. And we're actually going through that process right now, the painful process of, you know, of letting people go that aren't, you know, that don't click with the company culture.
Yeah.
So, and it's,
I'm sure those are tough decisions, right?
It's extremely tough. Yeah. And I don't care who you are. If you like laying people off or letting people go, then you're an asshole because they're real people. They just don't necessarily, they don't fit in. Mm-hmm. with the culture, and it's not that they're bad people, but that's what I'm dealing with right now is getting the system set up and making sure that my team really understands my company culture, so when I'm not here it's being run as if I'm here.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I'm sure it's tough, right? Because on paper, you know, they may be doing this checklist, but there's a lot more to it. There's that whole other side of things, and it's, you know, it's not necessarily anything about them, but there's obviously different kinds of people out there. And mm-hmm. so you want people to all fit with your vision as the owner, as the entrepreneur, you know, what you're envisioning for the brewery.
Correct.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Obviously, you've learned a ton. And I want to get into a little bit of a lightning round because the first question is, what is your favorite business book or podcast, or what have you learned from that?
My favorite business book is, that's a good one. the concept is make your bed.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So
it can you tell me a little, what does that mean?
Because the first thing, the first thing in the morning, if you make your bed, you're already successful.
Okay.
So it kind of starts your day out, mm-hmm. and it's about the regiment. It was written kind of a Navy SEAL. So the regiment of being a successful, it doesn't have to be in business, in life. You know, you have to, again, it goes back to kind of some standards and procedures and, you know, mm-hmm. you do these things and you will be successful.
Interesting. Yeah. I love that. I love that piece of advice. What is your biggest pet peeve in business? I'm sure there's a lot.
My biggest pet peeve is when people don't greet my guests at the front door. Okay. Isn't that the truth, Brandy?
That makes sense, right? Smile.
Yeah, it's just, you know, this simplicity. I would say my biggest pet peeve is that.
That's totally fair. You know, as someone who owns a brewery, I could see it.
You know, when people have to wait at the front door and they're not being greeted, mm-hmm. it's a first impression.
Exactly. It's a first impression thing too, right? They walk in, they're immediately, you see the space, but you want to be seated, right?
And that, so my team knows that. And it's like, uh-oh, Sue has to go get the front door. We're in trouble. Uh-oh. No.
Now, I know you utilized a lot of people when building this up. What is your best networking tip?
My best networking tip is don't be afraid to talk to people. Mm-hmm. Don't be afraid to ask questions, no matter how they say there is no stupid question or dumb question, and really put yourself out there. Get out of your comfort zone.
Yeah.
Because you are going to grow by leaps and bounds by getting out of your comfort zone. Because 99% of people have been in my shoes, not necessarily opening a brewery, but, you know, being uncomfortable is okay.
Yeah.
And you're not going to screw up because you're going to learn from it. It goes back to learning, you know?
There you go. Yeah.
So I would say just push yourself to ask questions and get out and go to these networking things, mm-hmm. you know, and ask people questions or, you know, like call some of your past professors and, you know, mm-hmm. pick their brains and, you know, go out to coffee with somebody that is, you know, my daughter wanted to get into real estate. And I mean, like go out, I have plenty of friends that she could go out and have a cup of coffee with and, you know, ask these questions. So you grow,
just do it.
You know what? Really? I mean, it sounds so simple. Like you said,
it does, business isn't
hard.
Yeah. That's, I mean, exactly. Right.
It's the
little things, but I agree because I think there's a lot of, especially in this like day and age, and especially like my generation, it's, you know, being behind screens too, it's a little bit more intimidating to go talk to people in real life and approach somebody that you don't know.
Right.
You know, and so, but just doing it, people are so willing to help, right?
So willing to help.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right, and exactly. It doesn't have to be anything big. It's just like, ask just one person at a time and have one question. I mean, break it down to that simple. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Just start it and it carries on naturally.
Absolutely.
Yeah. No, I totally get that. What is a skill that every leader should have?
This is a great question. And it's the hardest one is to delegate and let go. And I'm telling you, I'm not good at it. And that's one of the things that I'm giving myself my own advice is you have to let people fail. Mm-hmm. You have to give them the job and not micromanage. Micromanaging, I had to learn what micromanaging is.
Oh, yeah.
Because I kept saying, is this micromanaging? Checking up on if you give a task or a job to an employee, if you say, I'm going to give you an example, like, okay, I'm going to give you this list to do. You don't have to do it yourself. They have to do it themselves. Or they can manage, you know, but I give them this list and I can't go start doing this list. Mm-hmm. Say washing the windows.
Yeah.
Hey, manager, I want you to wash the windows, you know, and here, these windows need to be washed. You don't necessarily have to do it, but we're using this as an analogy.
Yeah.
And then if they're not washed in 3 days and 4 days and 5 days, I can't go get a squeegee and wash the windows. Mm-hmm. That is micromanaging.
Okay.
But if I give a task and then go, hey, I'm not here and how is the window washing going? Mm-hmm. You can check in and you can ask questions.
But you can't do it yourself.
But you can't do it. That is micromanaging.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. I'm sure that was a barrier you had to overcome at the beginning.
It's hard because as you see the window is dirty and the next day it's dirty. you have to have some uncomfortable conversations. Mm-hmm. And as the issues get more and more detrimental to your company, you have to have these difficult conversations that you can't do it. It's a learning process. It's I would say delegation and not micromanaging.
No, it's definitely tough to learn, I'm sure. Last question of the lightning round. What is your go-to method for handling stress? I'm sure you had a lot about it, especially in the beginning.
My go-to for handling stress, and this is another one that entrepreneurs, I've never had the level of stress in my life that I have running this.
Really?
I've raised four kids.
Yeah.
It's just a whole nother level of stress because it's everything's on, you know, as a sole owner too, it's on my shoulders.
It's all on you,
So it's a big one. Mm-hmm. So stress is managing it. I'm a runner.
Okay.
So I don't get to run as much anymore because of this, but I try to. Running and swimming and being athletic has always been an outlet of mine. And I enjoy beer. You know, I own a brewery.
You do own a brewery. Yeah, that would make sense.
You know, at the end of the day, I like to sit down and have a couple of my beer. Not my beer. I would like to add to this.
Okay, go ahead.
That even though I went to the brewing program and I theoretically know how to brew beer and I've home brewed, but I am a terrible brewer. It takes years to develop this. I do not brew our beer.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
There we have our head brewer,
Nick. Another thing you had to delegate, huh?
Yes. Yeah. Our head brewer, Nick, is fabulous. And come in and you're enjoying a crowd surfer right now.
Exactly,
Both are enjoying. Shout out to Nick. Yes. Yeah.
He's Nick's clearly fabulous. Doing a good job.
Yes. I can't take credit for that. So.
No, that's awesome. Well, thank you so much, Sue. I'll end on this final question. Throughout, you know, your entire career and now running 100 Mile and owning it, what has been the biggest key to your success at the core of it?
100% community and my passion for, I absolutely love having a business in Tempe. Mm-hmm. I love my loyal community. We have a lot of outreach programs. We have our lap around the lake on Sunday morning. You know, it's the community that we have built here that I'm most proud of. And I think people come back because of it. They feel welcome.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a part of belonging to something, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And I did get what I'm very proud of too is I was just named Businesswoman of the Year in Tempe.
Congratulations. 2025. That is amazing.
So
wow. Oh, that's so cool.
Yes. And I'm super proud and honored.
Yeah.
But what I'm most ecstatic about is I get to have this title for a year.
Oh, there you go.
And then next year I get to get up and present the award for the 2026. And I get to present my initiatives that I worked on this year. So I'm really super excited about that.
That is amazing. Congratulations. Yeah.
Thank you.
That is awesome.
And I don't just take it as a title. It's like I owe my city. I owe the mayor. Mm-hmm. I owe council, Tempe Tourism, the chamber, Tempe. I owe them I don't have this business just for me. I have it for the city.
It's for the community, right?
It's for the community. And when, you know, tours come here into Tempe and they come to my brewery, I'm representing Tempe, not just 100 Mile.
Yeah.
And I take that very seriously.
That's so awesome. And it's a test to everything you've done here. And I mean, everything about it is incredible, from the intangibles to everything you've done.
Thank you,
Oliver, so much for being on. I love this conversation. It was great.
Cheers.
Cheers.
That was Sue Wrigler, founder and owner of 100 Mile Brewing and the Tempe Businesswoman of the Year. For Sue, everything builds. Sue's path to launching the brewery didn't start when she started building it. It was shaped by everything she did before. Her background in sales, marketing, design, and hospitality gave her the foundation she needed. Nothing was wasted. Even if it wasn't what she wanted to do ultimately, she built on her skills and developed herself. When it came time to start the brewery, she started with what she had. No big master plan. She didn't know exactly what she wanted, but she had a vision. She moved forward, step by step, figuring things out along the way. Progress came from taking action, not from waiting for the perfect conditions. You have to just start. And it was passion-driven. The first year brought little to no paycheck, long hours, and little sleep. But Sue loved what she was building. The passion didn't make it easy, but it made it worth it, and it kept her going. And once she got it running, The team became everything. Sue learned quickly that culture fit is non-negotiable. When the right people are on board, everything gets better. When they're not, nothing works. Hiring for culture is now one of her top priorities. For Sue, delegation is critical. She had to learn the hard way that doing everything yourself wasn't sustainable. Delegation means trusting your team to handle what you give them, and then letting go. That's what separates leaders and delegators from micromanagers. When you ask someone to do it, you have to let them do it. It's not as simple as it sounds when you're the one in charge and responsible for everything. In the end, it's about community. Sue built 100 Mile Brewing for Tempe. It's not just a business. It's a place where people feel connected. The sense of belonging is what she's most proud of. Thanks for listening. This week, I encourage you to write down what you're most passionate about. What is your ultimate goal? What's the dream? For Sue, it was to own a brewery. It's absolutely never too late. And I don't mean just think about it, actually write it down. I'll see you next time. In the meantime, keep building something great. Thanks for tuning in.